Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Today on The Grave Talks, how a skeptic ended up owning a very haunted location. A conversation about the Indiana State Sanatorium with owner Greg Larson. Greg Larson's background is in science and engineering, not the paranormal. While looking for property to use for large-scale medieval events, his real estate agent showed him a very unique property, the abandoned Indiana State Sanatorium. The grounds of the sanatorium cover 200 acres, and the buildings on the property covered more than 120,000 square feet. He bought the sanatorium without ever even considering the possibility of paranormal activity. The sanatorium has had some very dark and tragic events happen on its grounds, and many say it's one of the most haunted places they've ever investigated. Despite his background in science and being a self-proclaimed skeptic, Greg now owns more than one paranormal property. He also owns the historic Stark Saloon and runs Billy Creek Village, two other locations in Indiana that are both said to be quite active. On this episode of The Grave Talks, a conversation about the Indiana State Sanatorium and how a skeptic ended up owning paranormal properties with owner Greg Larson. I need to know how you ended up as the owner of the Indiana State Sanatorium.
The Indiana's main tuberculosis hospital from 1908 to 1968. I have, I guess I would say, an eclectic background of things that I do. I trained civil engineer, computer programmer, was at an employee-owned defense company, did very well there. My family's been very supportive, and I'm not, we're not poor, and we're not like Bill Gates wealthy, but I never worried where my next pizza was coming from growing up. And I have also helped found a medieval combat society where I get together with my closest 5,000 friends and beat each other up with sticks. And so I was looking for a place out in the country near where I lived. I had attended school at the University of Illinois, and the Indiana State Sanatorium is, an hour from there. It's a beautiful part of rural Indiana. It's in Park County, famous for its covered bridges. And I was looking for property, and my real estate agent said, "Hey, I got a couple pieces of property to show you," because I was looking for a place to hold large-scale medieval events.
I'm going to just interrupt. I do find that fascinating. I didn't I didn't predict that would be part of this conversation.
I love it. I own another business where I have a manufacturing business that manufactures medieval fighting gear, LARP gear, cosplay gear, that kind of thing. And so I was looking for a place in the country out here. And I had bid on a couple of places, and I'd lost to the Amish. The county is about half Amish, where the sanatorium is located. On three sides of the property, it's Amish, so it's really on the middle of nowhere. And I'd lost Amish from bidding on some other properties, and my real estate agent says, "Hey, do I have a place for you?" She's like, "What are you looking for?" I was like, "Oh, a couple hundred acres, some old buildings I could renovate, someplace I could hold events." And so she brought me out to the Indiana State Sanatorium, and I was like, "Oh no, this is way too much. 100,000 plus square feet of old abandoned hospitals, a half a dozen houses in the middle of nowhere, but it's got amazing infrastructure. It had like a 3/4 of a mile of steam tunnels. It's got a mile of roads, several hundred acres, 100 acres of woods. It's really a neat place." And I was like, "No, I don't think so. I really don't think this is going to be my cup of tea." But I have a kind of a weird habit that I have a tendency to hire people or work with people that are neat people, but don't have like the desire to go to college or the desire to like follow the standard path. And so I find people with passion, and I was like, "I'll go into business with you." And that's how I ended up in the sword fighting business. And I had a young lady that was working with me at the time, and she was like, we had remodeled a couple houses together, and she's like, "We could do this. You need to buy this." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't think so. It's quite a bit." She's, no, really, it'll work." And as luck would have it, or believe it or not, you can't buy a ghost town with a mortgage. You can't go to a bank.
Another thing I never thought of today.
You can't go. The sanatorium, it has a power plant on it. It has coal burning power plants, huge furnaces, electric turbines. It's got a sewage treatment plant. It's got a water treatment plant. It's got a water tower. And so it's a full.
It's like a city.
It's a whole city.
Yeah.
More of a small town. And it had issues. It had asbestos. It had coal ash. It had buried fuel storage tanks. And so all of these issues really made the property a steal. It wasn't very expensive compared to what you're getting. I paid less for the property than I would have for blank land. If nothing was here, it was just rural hunting ground fields. I would have paid more for it than I had to pay because everything was here. No matter what you've heard about Indiana, I don't know where you're from, but Indiana has a reputation of being a pretty conservative place, but it's very progressive when it comes to cleaning up pollution. Most states, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, all the neighboring states, they go, "Oh, look, that's pollution. That's terrible. We should do something about that." And so they file lawsuits against the people they think caused the pollution and make them clean it up. Mm-hmm. But Indiana's got a different policy. Indiana goes, "Oh, look, there's pollution. Let's clean it up. And then we'll sue somebody with the bill." So they'll just go out and clean it up. They have a great program called the Indiana's Brownsville Program, where they'll go out and clean up sites. And then they'll look back, they'll hand the bills to their lawyers, and they'll go back through it. And I knew about this program as being a civil engineer. And I knew that there's a very, very good chance I could get Indiana to clean it up. And the good news was the person they had to sue to clean it up after they cleaned it up was the state of Indiana, because the state of Indiana is the one who left the asbestos and left the fuel tanks and left the coal ash. And I turned in a big environmental impact report, and they're like, "Yeah, that's the kind of thing we clean up all the time. And yep, we're responsible for it. So you win today, Mr. Larson." And so they agreed to remediate completely the site. They've since sent probably $5 million cleaning up the site.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so, but because before because I knew about this program through my work and stuff, and the previous owner was kind of lived in fear of getting tagged with the environmental cleanup. And that's why no bank would give a mortgage, because the bank was like, "Man, if we got this back, they could ask us to clean it up." And so it was always a big hot potato. And back when the facility closed, and we're jumping way ahead in the story, but back before when the facility closed in 2011, the bank didn't take it back. They had a big mortgage on it, but they didn't want it because they didn't want to get stuck with the cleanup. And so the place sat vacant. And so through a variety of factors, that no bank will write a mortgage, it had massive environmental problems, and it was abandoned. No one really wanted it. And so I got it at a pretty good price. I bought the property. My friend who was in the rehabilitation of old houses, restoration of old houses with me, convinced me to buy it. I bought it. A couple weeks later, I'm saying, man, I think I made a mistake. I'm not sure this is a good idea. What was I really thinking that I needed an abandoned psychiatric hospital, an abandoned tuberculosis hospital? I mean, it's neat and everything, but what am I going to do with it? I mean, it's like, it's going to take.
I'm sorry, this is making me laugh, and I shouldn't be laughing, but no, it's fine.
It's quite funny.
I find it amazing that you're in this situation and you have an abandoned psychiatric hospital, sanatorium.
And a tuberculosis sanatorium. And so I owned it about 2 weeks. I'm feeling pretty like, man, it was middle of winter. It was like 10 below. I'd been out to site a couple times, spooky as all get out. And I'm like, man, this place is just creepy. No one's ever going to want to come here. I mean, my friends who sword fighter, they're not going to like this creepy place. But I'm sitting there, I'm at work, and I get a phone call from the Discovery Networks to say, hey, Mr. Larson. We heard you bought Leon Bryant. We'd love to film a television show out there. I was like, a television show? What kind of television show? They're like, oh, it's a paranormal show. It's called Destination Fear, and we'd really like to film out there. I was like, okay, that's cool, but I haven't told you that I own the property, so how are you calling me to ask to film out here? I was like, well, the previous owner wouldn't talk to us, told us to go F ourselves. And we hope that you, being the new owner, would be more cool about it. I'm like, well, I'm pretty cool, I guess. But you still haven't told me how you know that I own it. Well, it was for sale and then it wasn't for sale. So we had hoped it sold. So we had some lawyers look up the property records. And then we had a private eye get your phone number. I was like, wow, that's just a little stalking. you really want to film out here? She goes, absolutely. I was like, you're going to pay me a ton of money to do this. She goes, hardly anything. It's like, well, sounds like fun. Come on out. And so they sent a production scout out, and I showed her around. And if you've seen some of the pictures, it's a pretty spooky looking
place. It's a pretty spooky looking place, yes.
And I show her through all the buildings. I show her through the steam tunnels. I show her through the morgue, the 1908 tuberculosis hospital. I show her through the nursing home, 120-bed nursing home. I show her through a 200-bed psychiatric hospital. And like I say, everything is still here. When the facility closed, they just walked away.
That's what I found so fascinating. When you look at these pictures, you know, it was like they locked the door thinking they'd be back the next day. Is kind of what it looked like in some of the pictures I looked at.
They knew they weren't going to be back. They lost their license. They lost like 30 lawsuits. They knew they weren't coming back.
But they were like, somebody else can clean this up. We're just leaving it as is.
We're leaving it as is. They shipped out the patients. They let several of the psychiatric patients, they bussed them to nearby towns and said, you're free. Don't get in trouble.
No.
Here's $100. Check
they into, did not do that.
Yeah, they did. They
did.
And so some of them are still homeless in towns in Indiana. I mean, you still find some of them downtown Indianapolis where they're still homeless. I'm showing this production scout through all the buildings and lots of oohs and ahs. We get to the top of one of the buildings at the end of the tour. So I was like, you like it? She goes, like it. I love it. It's like the paranormal Disneyland. It's got a tuberculosis hospital. It's got a nursing home. It's got a psychiatric hospital, a sketchy psychiatric hospital that closed for mysterious circumstances. There's been murder suicides and unexplained deaths. And it's just perfect. I'm like, cool. So you're going to film on her? She goes, absolutely. I was like, cool. So when? She's telling me a couple months. I was like, so I'm just making small talk at this point. I was like, so what do you do for a living, young lady? And she's like, oh, I'm a production scout for the Discovery Networks. I'm like, well, that sounds like a fun job. I mean, do you just go around the country looking for places to film? She's like, yeah. It's like, I mean, do you do like all their television shows? Do you know like Parker on Gold Rush and Chip and Joanne in Texas? She goes, no, I just do mostly the paranormal stuff. I was like, I'm going to call bullshit. I know these shows are popular, but you can't do this as your full-time job. And if you do this as your full-time job, these networks have way more money than I think they do. And you guys aren't going to pay me enough if your full-time job is to look for haunted places. And she says, you got me. A partner and I own a couple places in Ohio. where we do paranormal investigation. That's my other job. I'm like, oh, that's neat. So like what, once a month you ask somebody to come look for ghosts on your property? She goes, no, every night. I'm like, every night? Like Christmas and New Year's every night? Like 365 days a year every night? She goes, oh, well, not Christmas, but New Year's for sure. And call it 300 nights a year, we'll have somebody in our properties. I was like, well, that's neat. And like, I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know what you charge somebody for ghost hunting. And she goes, I'm like, so I asked her, I was like, so what do you charge for ghost hunting? I thought she was going to say $50 or something. She goes, $500 a night. I'm like, what? You've got to be kidding me. $500 a night. You charge $500 a night for people to come and look for ghosts. She goes, yeah. I'm like, and you have people lined up to do this. She goes, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I was like, well, my mom only raised one dumb son. It wasn't me. No, I'm kidding. I love my brother. I asked her, it's like, so how does my haunted place compare to your haunted place? She goes, oh, it's like 10 times better. I'm like, 10 times better? You've got to be kidding me. She goes, no, there's only a few places in the country that are like this. I was like, there's Trans-Allegheny in West Virginia, big old mental hospital. There's Waverly, a tuberculosis hospital down in Louisville, Kentucky. There's the Ohio State Reformatory where they filmed the Shawshank Redemption. And I'm like, okay, so what does the Ohio State Reformatory charge for a night of ghost hunting? She goes, oh, I think it's $3,500. I'm like, get out. You're kidding me. She's no. And I'm not kidding you. And I was like, young lady, do you want a job? And she said, absolutely. And so she introduced me to the paranormal industry. Or I guess it's not an industry.
It kind of is community, yeah.
Yes, I think a community is a better thing than an industry. And she just told me about all the people that come to visit her. They're true believers. They want the experience. And I met her partner, and we put together a plan to let people come into the Indiana State Sanatorium. Obviously, the Discovery Network has filmed their shows out here, and I've met all the famous YouTube and TV personalities. I guess I'm, since becoming from like a totally non-paranormal background, I have no idea who any of these people are. It's like, I guess like, oh, Zach Bagans this, Zach Bagans that, is like, is he related to Bilbo? I mean, I'm sorry, Zach.
No idea.
No idea. And people who like famous people from YouTube, it's like, oh, I got 10 million followers. I'm like, 10 million followers, that's a lot of followers. And so, it's turned out really well. The people that come are amazing. They're interested in the property. They're earnest. They treat it with respect. I was expecting like Yahoo's running around, like playing flashlight tag or something, or trying to scare each other. But no, everybody takes it very seriously. They're very, like I say, they're very committed to it. When we spoke earlier, I had said that I was I'm a skeptic, but I'm a skeptic with an open mind. Mm-hmm. I just want to see repeatable evidence, not anecdotal evidence, not something that goes bump in the night. But if I set a pencil down on the table and said, could you move that pencil? And the pencil moved like a half a rotation, I'd be like, oh, that's neat. I'd set it down again. I was like, could you move it back the other way? And if it did that a couple times, that's all the convincing I would need.
What if you set the pencil on the table and it moves on its own and you saw it?
Oh, there's all sorts.
And then, so do you start debunking there? Like, was there a breeze? No, is the table not balanced?
I am, like I say, I'm an engineer and scientist. I work at a defense company. I worked on $1 million of pieces of equipment, sensors, cameras. I have patents on augmented reality technologies. And so I have spent 3 months trying to get rid of spurious radio signals or background noises in my sensors. And so it seems like a lot of the paranormal equipment, like really, they like the noise. They like the spurious signals that that work their way through. It's like, man, I could filter that out for you. I could just write a little bit of code. You won't get any of that noise on any of your equipment. And they look at me in horror. And the other thing is, I was seriously worried that my skepticism would be a detriment to running a facility like this. And I have found out is exactly the opposite. Part of it is, I guess, a lot of purveyors of haunted attractions or haunted places really overplay their experiences. They go, oh, the Joe, he always scratches you when you go down the road and he slams the door and Bill does this and this happens. I don't do any of that. I give the history tour. I try to make the most, authentic experience you could have. We don't have any, like I said, I have 400 beds that people slept in and died in the property. We don't bring anything in. One of the disappointing things about taking over the facility was I can't get rid of anything. I mean, I have like a room with like 5,000 gowns. It's like, well, those are kind of moldy and old. And
what do you do with them? And if you get rid of them, then what,
No, everybody loves them. One of the things that we have is when you come into state care during the psychiatric era, you were told what you could bring to the hospital. You could bring two pairs of pants, three shirts, pair of slippers, pair of shoes, your toothbrush. No, and then they would be given these instructions and no one would listen. And they would bring stuff like their wedding albums, their figurine collections, their kids' teeth from when they were little. And we go, oh, that's nice. It's wonderful you brought that, but you can't have that in your room because your roommate's going to steal it. He's going to throw it at you. Something bad's going to happen. And so they put their name in their suitcase and they put all this stuff in the suitcase. And then they put it in a room. And so when the place closed, I got left like 500 people's most personal belongings. Like the most, if you had to bring one suitcase to the end of the world, what would you bring? And now I have all these people's stuff and it's really depressing. It's kind of like Schindler's List.
It has to be.
It is one of the most depressing rooms I've ever been in. And so, like I said, this place is spooky. The tunnels, when you're up there in the dark and you're 400 feet from the nearest entrance up on the fourth floor and you hear something creak or crack in the hallway and it's pitch dark. It's terrifying. The monkey part of your brain, your lizard part of your brain says, get out of here. Mm-hmm. Danger, danger. Don't go in the dark cave. Go somewhere that's safe. Where is safe? And then the people that come really, when I'm up in the buildings, I'm not there. I've learned way more than I thought I would ever learn about paranormal investigations doing this, but they sit quietly, they commune, they listen, they're perceptive for that type of thing. When I'm in the buildings, I am like making sure the floor is not going to collapse, that the doors work, that, yeah, I mean, oh, look, there's somebody spray painted. I'm in there scrubbing graffiti off of a wall. And so I'm not really there in the mindset that I'm looking for something. I'm in the mindset that I got to fix this. And so I look at the buildings in a little bit different light.
And speaking of fixing it, it's 120,000 square feet of building space, something like that.
Yes.
Like there's got to be things you don't even know what you don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm pretty clever when it comes to fixing and being an engineer. And so, yes, there is things I don't know, but the property had some other secrets that I didn't know when I bought it.
I didn't
know much about the history of the property when I bought it. I knew it was a sanatorium, and but I didn't really look into the history. And so one of the things that I'm working on doing is getting the whole site put on the National Historic Registry as a National Historic site. I was over at the Indiana Archives looking through the build blueprints and the records and stuff like that. And me and my wife was helping me. And so we're sitting there going through the books. And I opened up an annual report from like 1914. And in it are all these plans for this barn, this dairy barn, the Indiana State Sanatorium Dairy Barn. I was like, wow, look at this barn. It's huge. It was designed by Purdue University, built by the state of Indiana. It was like a state project as a model dairy barn. It was going to be like, if you're going to build this dairy barn, this is how Purdue says you should build a dairy barn. And it was huge. It was massive. The photos were gorgeous. And I'm like, I turned to my wife. I was like, oh, look at this building that's no longer here. It's amazing. And she's like, you moron. It's across the road. I'm like, what do you mean it's across the road? She goes, I swear, if you go down our driveway and look out across the road, you're going to see this barn. I'm like, no way. Anyway, so we drive back out to the sanatorium from the state archives. And well, lo and behold, there it is. I was like, man, I'm not very perceptive.
Wow, do I own that?
No, I know I didn't own it because someone would have had told me I was going to own it. But I whip into the driveway. She's like, what are you going to do? I was like, I'll go see if it's for sale. And I go up and knock on the door. And she's like, your property wouldn't have to be for sale. And the owner was like, yeah, we're thinking about selling it next week. We haven't put it on the market or anything. I was like, what do you want? And she told me, I was like, sounds fair. And we agreed to buy it right then. And so it's an amazing building. It's still in like its immaculate shape, but we're turning it into a wedding venue. Mm. So like a huge wedding venue. And we have other project properties, buildings up here. One of the kind of the, another odd fact about the sanatorium is that everybody that worked out here lived out here. They didn't want them spreading tuberculosis across the country.
Yeah.
And so they all lived here. And so there's houses and there's bungalows and there's dormitories and there's all these buildings. And like the five-story mental hospital was originally built as dormitories for the tuberculosis era staff. And so they remodeled it as a mental hospital after they closed the tuberculosis hospital. But they had the dairy, which sprouted milk and meat for the facility. And so, but because of that, we have some gorgeous houses out here. The best one, it's a 6,000 square foot superintendent's residence. Like we call it the mansion. We're in the process of renovating, and it's going to be an 11 bed, 9.5 bath house when we're done with it. Big, huge, wow. 1920s. Kind of craftsman style, but more kind of like, I don't know, classic state construction architecture. It's way over engineered and it's an amazing building. And so we're remodeling that. We're remodeling all the other bungalows. We are preserving the spooky buildings, the psychiatric hospital, the nursing home, as is. We're not moving. We're not cleaning it up. And like when I say clean up, we're not pulling the beds out. We're not moving the dressers. We're leaving everything pretty much as it is.
And for the people who are going in to investigate, they love that.
Oh yes, they absolutely love it. But even buildings that I thought had no value for investigating. They are valued. We call it the commercial building or the office. In 2008, they knocked down the last remnants of the children's hospital. There was a children's tuberculosis hospital. There was actually two hospitals on the site. There was the main state tuberculosis hospital, and then there was a second hospital, which was the children's hospital. And they had 120 children here, and I think the youngest were like three. I mean, they'd be taken from their parents and brought here, and they'd try to cure them. Originally, they just tried to keep them alive, and then they realized that, wow, we're doing pretty good at keeping them alive, but then they realized they weren't like educating them and teaching them how to be people. They were just keeping them alive. Oh. And so there's a big story there. But anyway, so they tore down that hospital in 2006, I think. And like the last building they built out here was the office of the commercial building. And they built it right on the foundations of the children's hospital. And the old tunnels still run to it. But it's a brand new building. And so I had guests come out to do paranormal investigations. And it was about this time of year, maybe a little later, like October. And I check them in, I give them the tour. I walk into the building about 10 o'clock, just I think to check the laundry or something. And all of a sudden I set up all the detectors in the world go off, sensors and lasers and cameras all go whoop, 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 whoop. And I'm like, whoa, what are you guys doing? I mean, you know that the spooky buildings are up on the hill.
Yeah, it's not this one.
Not this one. She goes, no, the psychic energy here is off the charts. I mean, it's just like pegged, and we're picking up all this information, and we just all this children laughter up and down the halls that we're hearing. And they're like, is there any reason why there's children here? And I was like, oh yeah, this is built on the foundation of the children's hospital. And they lost their minds because I hadn't told them about the children's hospital. And I didn't think any of much of it. I was like, well, have a great night. And they spent the whole night like in this modern building, like investigating, even though there's like the psychiatric hospital, they were fascinated by what they were picking up in the commercial building. And I was like, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, well, teach his own. They seemed to have a good time. I talked to them the next morning. They had a blast. The next night, I checked the next group in, didn't say a thing to them about the people last night. I walk in, exactly the same thing happens. I'm like, no way. This, I felt like I was being punked by somebody that someone is playing a joke on me. And they swear up and down that nope, they didn't know about the previous night. They didn't know anything like that. And they're like, they're swearing that they're hearing the children. I was like, oh, okay, that's an odd coincidence. You don't have that happen every day. And believe it or not, it happened three nights in a row.
Mm-mm.
And I was like, man, this is so weird. I don't know what's going on. And so that's weird.
It is. Yes,
it is. It's a very odd coincidence. I don't play much when people say they hear it now. I've told the story before. Now it's out.
Right.
And so I've had other people tell me stuff. And like I say, as a good scientist, before I opened for day one of the facility, I spent the better part of an afternoon walking around with a whiteboard and screaming at the walls saying, hey, spirits, if you're here, you ever need to get a hold of me, I'm giving you three words. And I just screamed and repeated those three words, written them on the whiteboard, wrote them in the dust. And I walked around the buildings and I was like, if you ever got to get a hold of me, give me one of these three words, and I'll know that if you give me all three, I'll know that there's something up. My wife doesn't know. No one I've told knows what those words are. And yet to date, no one has given me those words. And so if any of your guests ever come out here, or any of your listeners ever come out here and you want to try to tell me what those three words are, I don't think it would convince anybody else, but it would convince me.
But I love that approach. Have got these secret words. And if they all three came back to you, that would be meaningful.
I would lose my mind. It would be a fundamental reordering of my my understanding of the universe.
Yeah. And that would rock a lot of things. It would be like, oh, wait a minute.
Yes. And so if I'll be on your show 2 years from now, so tell me all three words. I'm like, I was wrong.
I want to know. I've got to know if you ever hear the three words. Or even two of the three, I think, would be interesting.
I would count two of the three as a win. But people have done that. I've got some other challenges. One of them was that last year I was actually helping the lady move out of the dairy barn house. A friend of hers came over, and as I introduced him as doctor, I don't even remember his last name, but he's like the old medical examiner of the county. I was like, oh, medical examiner, county. Oh, this is great. I have so many questions. There's been a lot of deaths out at Lee Allen Bryant. He goes, yeah, lots of them. Like suicides.
Read some really strange things that happened there.
Like four people have jumped off the roof. Three of them died. One of them went through the awning and lived. He wasn't very happy, but he lived. A good old boy took all his clothes off and ran out into the highway and jumped in front of a truck and met his unfortunate end. In 2009, one of the employees had, I've heard two stories. The more tragic of the stories is that his coworker got a 50-cent-an-hour raise that the murderer thought he should have got. And so he took his friend down in the tunnels and execution style murdered him and then went across to the power plant and shot himself. Oh. And it was supposedly over a 50-cent-an-hour raise. But I've also heard that it was a love triangle. So It's not quite as, maybe it's a better story. Maybe it's not so.
I think the love triangle seems more believable for murder suicide.
Yeah, like I said, the police told me that kind of stuff. There was another patient that tried to escape, and he went down to across the river to like flee the facility. And he was crossing the river, and he got his foot caught in a beaver dam, and the water washed him downstream. But he like swam back up to the surface, but he couldn't get his foot out. And then it washed him downstream and underwater. And he swam back up and got his head out and washed him downstream. They think it took like 2 days for him to drown.
Oh my God.
It's like a terrible, terrible death. And so those are the kinds of like really terrible. That's how you get your license pulled for being a psychiatric hospital, is having people die like that.
Well, and I had read that. After it closed as the tuberculosis hospital, I think they thought it could be a nursing home, but the need wasn't as great as they wanted it. So then they brought in mentally ill patients.
That's close. Okay. That's really close. Basically, they, like I say, I say nothing but the fine folks of Park County, thank you for inviting me into your community and letting me be here. But the story that I heard from the people who built the facility, they approached the county and they approached the state and said, hey, if we buy the old Indian State Sanatorium, will you sell it to us at a good price and we'll open up a nursing home out there? And the state says, oh, that's a good idea. And they approached the county and they said, hey, if we open up a state-of-the-art nursing home out here, will you close your county nursing home and move all the patients here? And the county's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And so they spent about $5 million in 1976 dollars. When $5 million meant a lot of money. They hired like 100 people and they're like, okay, we're ready to open. Could you send us your old folks? And the county's like, oh, we have city employees that work at the nursing home. They're not happy about it closing. We're not going to send you any old folks. And they're like in a blind panic. They're like, oh my gosh, we're going to go out of business before we open. We have all the staff. We have all the stuff we've done and we have no patients. And as luck would have it, up in northern Indiana, there was a Catholic psychiatric hospital. I think it was called St. Anne's that was closing. And they were desperate. The state of Indiana was desperate. They're looking around. It's like, can anybody take like 1, 2, 3 patients? And the hospital here, the mental nursing home here at the time said, we'll take them all. And so like on one weekend, they moved like in 300 mental patients, and the county lost its mind. They're like, you didn't tell us you're opening a psychiatric hospital. And the reply was, well, you said you'd give us old folks and you didn't. And so we had to stay in business. And so now we're a psychiatric hospital. And that you get the idea. That's how kind of everything gets off on the wrong foot. Another thing for your listeners, if you ever decide to go into the nursing home business, don't find an old abandoned hospital out in the middle of nowhere and try to remodel it. Just go to a nice place with good sewer, good water, police and fire protection, because out here they had to do everything. They had to have their own water treatment plants, their own sewer plants,
right?
Their own fire department type stuff. I mean, their own electrical equipment that they had maintained. And so it was a much bigger project than just running an old folks home. It was like, oh, you have to run a whole city and to run an old folks home on the side. So
what's the infrastructure like there now? I'm assuming the one you're renovating and the
2008 building.
Yeah, that one.
Unfortunately, one of the reasons why the property was so inexpensive is after it was abandoned in 2011, the copper thieves came in. And so people came in with blow torches and saws and cut into the walls and pulled electricity or electrical wires out. They cut out the pipes. And so all of the buildings had been kind of gutted in a sense. And so that was our first project out here, was to get the buildings that were gutted in a minor way, that were new or were very usable, very livable when they closed, get those running again. And we got, like I say, they had stolen all the air conditioner coils and all the air conditioning heating out of them. And we got those all put back together. And so that is it. We got those done. That was our first year projects. And then we started moving on to other projects. But then another very positive thing happened. Once you're on TV and you're known for being a kook that buys old abandoned, maybe spooky properties, people come out of the woodwork to try to sell you more of them. And so I now own, I would say, too many spooky old abandoned places that people come and look for, other than the Enea Sanatorium.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Greg Larson about the Indiana State Sanatorium. In our next episode, we'll talk more about the paranormal activity there and about the other properties Greg owns, the Billy Creek Village and Stark Saloon. For more information, visit their website at thesanatorium.net or search Haunted Indiana State Sanatorium on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial-free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there. It's also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.